The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at tntradio.live. The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McClain and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT.
This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk with Brian McClain and your host, Timothy Shea. We're live from Texas and New York. Visit us on the web at tntradio.live. Brian, we've got even more headlines. A study out of Denmark today, the Moderna mRNA vaccine is now posing a risk, especially to young men, of developing chronic urticaria, which is hives, Brian. Hives are typically a transitory outbreak that lasts a few hours to a day, maybe two at most. But now these young men are developing chronic hives because they obeyed those illegal mandates and put poison in their veins.
Well, better hives than myocarditis, I suppose. But unfortunately, we just have to add hives to the list because myocarditis is right up there. And you know what? I remember back in 2021 reading studies and articles and notes from Pfizer and Moderna, and it looked like a lot of adverse reactions did seem to favor males.
Males who had precisely zero statistical chance of dying from COVID. And as for being able to transmit it, people say, oh, well, no, the real risk was that they would transmit it. Well, that's been debunked as well. And you mentioned myocarditis. Another study came out this week, Brian. More than half of the young men who develop myocarditis have permanent heart damage. Permanent. How many of them are going to die early because they took the mRNA gene jab?
Yeah, and unfortunately, many of them are top athletes. This is another confounding and dissonance-causing factor for a lot of people. Just last week, I had an article. It didn't make the top of the list because so much is happening. But just last week in my notes, if I go in the archive, I can pull up from my backup links a story about a footballer, I think somewhere in South or Central America, who had a heart attack on the field. And it was the third one in a week. So
right,
guys that are out there, yeah,
over 200 worldwide since they introduced the gene jab in December of 2020, over 200 professional footballers. These are some of the most physically fit athletes on the planet, and over 200 of them are now dead.
It says a lot about our mass media cartels. I call it that because that's what Mark Anderson, my friend, coined the term. And it's the most descriptive term. I do not like mainstream media or corporate media anymore. I like mass media cartel, because you would think that if 200 footballers had heart attacks in the last 3 years because of potentially this, it would be on ABC, NBC, CIANN. All the networks would be wanting that scoop, yet none of them touch it.
Absolutely. And that's a good formulation. I still kind of prefer weaponized mass media, because that's actually
that works
what it is.
Too.
Weapons of mass media, right? And yeah. Here's another thing that they're denying, Brian, that the 2020 election was the safest and most secure in history. A recent study came out in 26 states studied. Between 7 and 18% of registered voters either didn't exist or their residents didn't exist. These are phantom voters, 7 to 18% in elections that are typically decided by 5 points or fewer.
Yeah, shocking, right? I mean, I'm not surprised. I've been seeing these reports for the longest time. We've known this since 2020. They're sending ballots to hospital rooms, they're sending them to hotels, they're sending them to storage units. Heck, my friend here in Texas, who lived in California almost a decade ago, got three of them mailed to his house from California. So this is a mess.
Yeah, it is a mess, and they're trying to do it again. But you know where they're starting to push back is Ireland. There was a Palestinian flag hung from the O'Connell Bridge in Dublin, and two wonderful Irish patriots went and they clipped it and they took the flag. They didn't want it in the river to be a hazard to navigation. So they took the flag, rolled it up, and stuffed it in a dustbin right where it belonged. They want to take over Ireland just as though they've taken over the United Kingdom. Today, the Palestinian flag flew not alongside the Union Jack, but instead of the Union Jack, just like Boston City Hall flew the Chinese colors, not alongside the Stars and Stripes, but instead of the Stars and Stripes. These are people that are looking to take over the Western countries, but Ireland's pushing back. That referendum on the amending the Constitution to take out references to motherhood and other family issues. They found, Brian, miraculous medals in the ballot boxes. People were literally putting miraculous medals, putting their prayers in the boxes so that referendum would fail. And that referendum failed spectacularly. So as we've been saying here all along, prayer is our ultimate weapon. And are you listening to, enjoying to all the stories that we're bringing you here on TNT? Do you think we're doing a good job? Please let us know. Why not give us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, X, Instagram, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT.
Abroad or at home, this is your news.
By staying silent, we are part of the problem.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Critics are justifiably tearing into Buttigieg and Biden for yet another transportation disaster on their watch. And alternative media is abuzz with speculation on how the Baltimore Bridge collapse was a cyber terror attack on critical infrastructure, and that the mainstream media is lying to the public at the behest of the deep state to cover it up. Joining us now to help sort fact from fantasy is the author of Decline and Decay, Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Sachs, United States Army retired. Jeff, welcome to State of the Nation.
Hey, it's great to be with you, gentlemen. Pleasure being here.
Colonel, the old Army saw is that colonels and below study tactics and generals study logistics. Laura Logan reported in the War Room today that her sources are all saying it was a terror attack, specifically a cyber attack on critical U.S. logistics infrastructure. She said it was brilliant, well-planned strategic attack on one of the most important supply chains in the United States. The only busier one is in California. 80% of our auto imports come through the Port of Baltimore. What can you tell us about this critical infrastructure failure and this failure of the Biden administration yet again?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, being from Baltimore, Charm City, as we like to call it, my heart goes out to the entire city and those families that are affected. So hopefully our authorities can bring some closure to those families first and foremost. But listen, how many of these stories do we have to hear over the last 4 years, whether it's East Palestine, the train derailment, planes that are tearing apart, this latest incident in my hometown of Baltimore? How many more of these are we going to have to hear about? It's just emblematic of what's going on in our country, and it's decline and decay in it. But one of my major concerns, not just right now, but for the next year and the next 2 or 3 years, is a cyber attack on our critical infrastructure. And one of those critical infrastructures is the electric grid. Just think about how much of mass disruption that potential attack could be. And this ship attack or ship accident, whatever you want to call it, I'm sure we'll find out eventually. Maybe we won't. But that's clear to our adversaries. It's clear is that one major bridge can go down, and that it's going to affect not just Baltimore. It's going to affect the U.S. economy and the global economy just because of the importance of that port. So it's deeply concerning, and my hope, and we say in the Army, hope is never a method, but I'm really concerned about it as well as every American should be.
And as it pertains to national security, the ability to mobilize our military, and some other aspects, give us your take on that part, like the national security part. I mean, it's a critical port, not just for import and export, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, we're big in the military on lessons learned. And again, that's what I said. During the pandemic, we had this, national stockpiles. We had to empty those. We couldn't have supply with ventilators or anything like that. And we had to use the Defense Production Act for a lot of different things. So in the event of an event like that, national security is number one priority. Establishing command centers and logistics, our National Guard, our readiness, We better be prepared for that, because it's not a question of if it happens again. It's a question of when it's going to happen. And we need to be prepared. And that's really what it's about. And I'm just urging every American to be prepared. Be prepared individually. Have your families prepared for a massive event like that. So it concerns me greatly.
Yeah, and we do need to be prepared. And people talk about, you know, this is the second biggest port, and I mentioned 80% of our automobiles come through. But these are just some of the businesses that are now closed because the Port of Baltimore is closed. Domino Sugar, they're a bulk importer of sugar. Console Marine Terminal in Curtis Bay, which export coal. The Fairfield Auto Terminal, the Dundalk Auto Terminal, the Seagirt Terminal, which handles 4,000 container ships daily, transferring them from the ship to trucks to be distributed around the country. Cruise Maryland, which is the Carnival and Royal Caribbean lines, are closed. And you're absolutely right. A critical infrastructure, an attack on the electric grid could be catastrophic. But we had Nebraska State Senator Brian Hardin on recently, and he disclosed that there's an even bigger threat. The United States is in the middle of upgrading its Minuteman III missiles, and there's significant Chinese activity located close to the missile fields in North Dakota and western Nebraska and northeastern Wyoming, with all the indicia of spy operations, ostensibly a data center, which requires large amounts of electricity. There's electric substations nearby, or wind and solar projects. And of course, you've got the proximity to the thing they're spying on, which are the missiles. This is a serious security threat, and the Biden administration is completely ignoring it.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Over the last year or so, 2 years ago, I've been talking about this. With data centers and with Chinese coming in, swooping in, buying our farmland, especially close to the military bases and infrastructure. It absolutely is. We saw the Chinese spy balloon that went across the continental United States, basically sending information over to China in real time. We have a spy base in Cuba that's coming right on our shores. Like, we have to start to get serious about this, because eventually, again, there could be an attack or some type of a major event that's going to have ripple effects like we've not seen before in this country. So absolutely.
Yeah. I flagged up another anomaly on X.com. At America's Outlaw tweeted out, Angela Chow, sister-in-law of Senator Mitch McConnell, who drowned in her vehicle 6 days ago, was the CEO of the shipping company that owned the massive cargo ship that hit the Key Bridge and caused its collapse. She supposedly was drunk and backed her car into a pond and died. Then a few weeks later, a massive cargo ship she used to control rams into the Key Bridge. What do you think's going on there? Coincidence? I mean, I haven't verified that yet, but it looks like it's gone pretty wide. I don't see a whole lot of community notes on it.
Well, if that's what you're hearing, that is absolutely astonishing to me. And I did hear about that a few weeks ago, and now we see this. So maybe there's more there that, you know, some of our policymakers need to get after and dig deep, and some of our authorities to kind of figure out what's going on there. But that is, if proven to be true, I don't believe in coincidences. So we got to explore that for sure.
Yeah.
Jeff, you mentioned how people.
Oh, real quick, Timothy, I do see a community note now. Readers added this context. Angela Chow was CEO of Foremost Group, and the MS Dolly was owned by Grace Ocean Private, chartered by Maersk and managed by Synergy Marine Group. So a little extra breadcrumb trails for you to go down there, but this is very interesting nonetheless.
Hey, Jeff, you mentioned it.
Yeah, go ahead.
You've mentioned that people have lost trust. Who do you trust to investigate and give an honest assessment to the public of what exactly happened early yesterday morning?
Look, I think it's emblematic of what we, and again, it's hard to speak for a lot of Virginians here, but I'll try my best. But I've talked to a lot of people over the last year or so, and that's just been emblematic of what we've been experiencing over the last several years. Is we don't know. We don't have anybody that we can actually believe on, whether it's our policymakers in Washington, in Congress, whether it's the president, or whether it's the mainstream media. We don't know who we can turn to actually give us a straight answer. I mean, we're trying, but to that point is like we just lose faith in complete confidence in government as a whole. And that's not what our framers wanted, you know. And that's what, you know, that's why I wrote the book. That's why I'm concerned about it, is I don't really know who to believe. And so you get these conspiracy theories, you get all this. And then we just had a report by DOD that are just basically smacking down on the UFOs that I saw a few weeks ago as well, saying, hey, none of this really happened. It was just all anomalies. You know, don't believe it. Really? I mean, I have a hard time not believing that. So,
yeah, I got some pilots that would disagree with DOD on that one. Jeff, we want to thank you. We trust you. We trust your take. The book is Decline and Decay. You can get it at all the outlets that sell books online. Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Sachs, thank you for coming on State of the Nation. Can't wait to talk to you again.
Yeah, have a good Easter, guys. Thanks so much.
Happy Easter. You're listening to State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's David Curtin.
In my mind, government spending in the UK is absolutely horrendous. It has got completely out of control over the last 14 years of Conservative rule and 13 years before that of Labour rule. You would probably be astounded if you actually knew how much the government spent. In this financial year, these are the figures, the estimate for how much it wants to spend on everything, or how much it needs to spend, is £1.2 trillion, or £1.2 million, if you like, which is an amount of money that we cannot really comprehend.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT radio listeners rely on TNT radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
I want to say this, and I'm going to say it just once.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now let's have a conversation about the media, right? I was just berating the media, calling them a mass media cartel, which I do believe. But, you know, before the show today, Timothy and Kimberly, our producer, we were sitting around and we were talking about the media and the state of the media, where it's headed. And one of the things that came up that we just think is so important right now is that people are walking away from cable TV in droves. They're absolutely walking away. The numbers are abysmal. Tucker Carlson, for example, has way more eyeballs on his own platform than he did even on Fox as their top reporter. And joining us now is independent journalist, our friend David Grasso, joining us once again here at State of the Nation. David, thanks for joining us. What is your general take on the media and, more importantly, like what the average man and woman are looking for and where they go find it these days?
I think the average person looks for just straight media. And what's happened in today's world, which you've seen with the firing of Ronald McDaniel as a commentator over at NBC, is that basically we have a bifurcated media, right? And a lot of the media you all like to bash is really the mainstream media, which, I mean, it's a poorly kept secret. It's liberal. But these days, there is a big mushrooming conservative media as well that people tend to overlook. And I think that's courtesy of, you know, digital outlets, you know, thinking about upstarts like this show. You know, there are no longer gatekeepers in the media anymore. And a lot of times when we bash the media, we're really referring to the big establishment people. And let me, again, put a little asterisk there because it's not just them. There's a big difference between network media, which tends to be less opinionated, and then opinionated media like CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News. Specifically, I'm referring to cable news.
Yeah.
And it's been an interesting evolution, right? Because cable news displaced the network news, the broadcast news from the top numbers. And now it looks like digital media. We already talked about Tucker Carlson, but there's others as well. Digital media is starting to supplant cable media. So I guess the good news out of the Ronna McDaniel story is that nobody would have heard what she had to say anyway, right? The ratings over at MSNBC are absolutely abysmal. But what about this evolution of digital now replacing cable?
Well, here's the thing about cable news. It's really interesting you mentioned that, right? Because even though cable news does have lower ratings, well, not Fox anyway, specifically some shows, but even let's go to Fox, which is, you know, has the highest ratings among cable news by any measure. Really, they're more of a cultural phenomenon. They punch above their weight when it comes to culture. When it comes to raw numbers, even at Tucker Carlson's, you know, heyday before he was dismissed, you're only talking about 3 million people watching at that live moment. That does not count the clips. That does not count all the media covering the rest of the media. So it's important to remember that, that cable news, while the raw numbers are not high, culturally, we're sitting here talking about it, it's still very important.
Yeah, that's a good point.
When you compare those to, like, say, I don't know, a very well-established outfit down here south of me in Austin, Texas, called InfoWars, sometimes they're looking at 10 million eyeballs on a live stream. What do you think about that comparison?
Well, remember, InfoWars is conspiratorial and borders on, you know, more entertainment. People always like to hear news that appeals to their ideology, right? And advertisers like that, right? Because, hey, if someone's gullible enough to believe this, we can sell them the stuff we can't typically sell to a typical audience. And that's really the problem these days, is that fake news in many cases is more profitable than real news. Think about real news. You have to fact check. You got to make sure you're not saying things are just off the wall, which of course we all notice that a lot of established outlets are guilty of this, but they at least have to have the facade that they are trying to do that. Alex Jones makes no secret, which he revealed in court, that he is an entertainer, not a journalist.
Well, you know, we could probably say the same about Don Lemon if we got him in the right court, maybe if he wasn't on the other team politically. And, you know, are they fact-checking? I mean, they gave us a couple years of Russiagate, and they still don't seem to want to fact-check that one.
You know, and here's the problem, and here's what I think about, you know, Ronald McDaniel, you know, lasting at NBC 3 days. Instead of sitting here and feeding you my partisan opinion or what I think about Ronna McDaniel, we could talk an hour about how she, you know, really oversaw the managed decline of the Republican Party and probably should have been dismissed a long time ago. I think the important conclusion for your audience is basically that, you know, the way people perceive the world has become bifurcated. And we do live, as Kellyanne Conway called it, you know, all facts. We live in a world where this is normalized. And what is true to one segment is not true to another. Of course, I'm one of these people that still believe that facts are facts are facts. But sometimes facts, right, aren't very friendly to your own views. And you have to be open that not everything is left or right. Sometimes something is just correct.
Well, as Antonin Scalia, Justice of the Supreme Court, once famously put it, you know you're doing your job if your legal reasoning sometimes leads you to a result with which you disagree personally. And the same is true, really, when you're studying any story. And I think a bigger story than Ronna lasting only 3 days at NBC was the fact that CAA fired her as well. Can you talk to that a little bit?
I thought that was a really interesting twist, which, of course, you know, these agencies out here in California, you know, also very, very relevant, big cash cows. If you guys follow, remember, if you remember Rahm Emanuel from the Obama White House, his brother is one of the biggest agents out here in Hollywood. And I thought that was a part that wasn't well explained, right? So I'm one of these people that wakes up with my Google News dashboard and reads every single angle of a story, right? So literally, if you guys saw what I was staring at in the morning, you would probably be dizzy, but this is my job and this is what I do. And really, no one has explained why CAA dropped her. I think a normal agency would just want to make money and want to place her at another station, possibly Fox, possibly Newsmax. I mean, there's a market for her. I'm not offended by her walking around and breathing, but perhaps some people are.
Well, Rachel Maddow and Joy Reid did not seem very pleased. They actually went out and did a victory lap today and, you know, talked, you know, brought a little bit of inside corporate baseball, talked about. And it's funny because Rachel pretty much said, well, you know, this Rona was complicit in the, you know, lies about the stolen election. So it's like that seems to be the long pole in the tent of like, why they can't have her there.
Yeah, what I thought was interesting is I think there's a lot of parallels with this than with when at the time the CEO of Disney spoke against the Don't Say Gay law in Florida. And I think what people's brains go to politics, and you have to remember that NBC, the CEO of NBC News, or at least the division, his name is Cesar Conde, and in that case, it was the CEO of Disney. When you have a mutiny among your ranks, you have to side with your ranks. So one thing is politics and what you believe, and another thing is when all of your on-air talent at NBC is revolting openly on air, which is very unusual in the media, whether you think it's right or wrong, you probably should side with all of your A-listers.
All right. Yeah, well, I guess that's why Spotify was able to keep Joe Rogan. They don't really have A-list employees over there, do they? So they were able to say, you know what? Suck it up, Buttercup. We're going to make a lot of money here. All right. Hold the line, David. We have a headline coming in, and we'll pick up right where we left off right here at State of the Nation on today's News Talk.
Big news, news, news.
Story which contains more than first meets the ear.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Former President Donald Trump criticized New York Judge Juan Rachon, who is overseeing his hush money case, alleging bias due to the judge's family's connections to Democrats and claiming his First Amendment rights are being violated by a gag order. Former President Donald Trump has stated that Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s candidacy in the presidential race, despite being the most radical left candidate due to his environmental policies, might inadvertently benefit the MAGA campaign by drawing votes away from Joe Biden.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
All right, David, let's pivot to TikTok. What is going on with TikTok? Are they banning it? Are we going to have it disappear from the App Store? Is it going to save us from the CCP? What are your thoughts on this whole thing?
So full disclosure, I do not have TikTok on my phone, although all my friends do. It's estimated that people under 50, about 50% of them are on TikTok and get their news from it, which is quite frightening. The TikTok saga is very interesting. Many years ago, as part of my job, I was asked to write a policy paper on this. And I think what your audience needs to know is that, let's start in China. There is no difference between the public and private sector in China. So there is no such thing as a fair private company. So them having that much outside influence over one of the top apps, really the top app in the United States at the moment, especially young people, is concerning. The Trump administration and the Biden administration have attempted to get Congress to ban it. And today, the House passed a bill, of course, typical Congress, the opposite of progress is Congress. We're waiting for the Senate to act on it. And Biden has said he would sign a bill. But here's the curveball. Trump flip-flopped on this issue. Trump says that he's against banning TikTok. And remember, there are intermediate solutions. You don't have to just ban it. It could be sold to a quote-unquote American company and stay afloat without having data piped into, you know, China.
And it's my understanding, well, you know, there was an article that came out really quickly when Trump kind of did a 180 on that, saying that someone he was looking at for a potential cabinet member was a giant investor in a company related to ByteDance or ByteDance itself. I can't remember which, but there Jeff was a little Yass. Bit of kickback. Yes, that's it. Yeah. Do you think there's
Jeff
a there?
Yass
there?
Philadelphia-based billionaire, huge donor, makes a great case to keep TikTok. But in the end, you know, there needs to be a solution. I'm for just changing it to American ownership and that way keeping the app without, you know, benefiting the CCP, as you mentioned.
Yeah, the problem with that, though, is the Chinese law does not permit that. So there's no mechanism for that to happen. And what's interesting to me is that TikTok in China is not like TikTok in the U.S. TikTok in the U.S. has actually killed people with stupid things like the cinnamon challenge, where people will try to swallow a tablespoonful of cinnamon. And many people have died on that. People have died from water poisoning. You can actually poison yourself by drinking too much water too quickly, and they've died that way. And over in China, it's not, you know, overweight women in thongs twerking. It's young children playing Mozart violin concertos, and it's young engineers showing off their latest robotics project. And it's things that are uplifting and culturally enriching and educational. So the disparity between TikTok there and TikTok here, I think that's the real problem.
And you're poking a hole in my argument. That is fundamentally the issue, which is Beijing ultimately will make the call. Back when the Trump administration tried to do a forced sale to Oracle, which is owned by Larry Ellison, who is a huge Republican, they wanted that contract anyway. Beijing moved to block that. So I really don't know what the solution is to this problem. India has notably banned TikTok. Several other countries have as well over national security concerns. Of course, India shares a border with China and has an ongoing border skirmish going on there. And you're absolutely right. TikTok in China is about inspiring children to be astronauts, not blue-haired women wearing keffiyehs yelling Free Palestine. So very, very different product they're offering for sure.
Yeah, clearly a very specifically tuned algorithm. And the thing that I think is ironic about this is if you kind of watch the development of TikTok over the years, you can see Meta creeping right behind them and basically using the exact same algorithm, whether it's scantily clad twerking, you know, whatevers, or you know, like Timbo's saying, you know, these sort of challenges and things that, you know, end up people making dumbing people down and sexualizing them, and that's it's like the same sort of thing. It's like that's why I'm a little bit even more concerned about Meta than I am TikTok in many cases.
I would disagree. The algorithms learn off your preferences. So if I could pull up my Instagram, you would get videos in four different languages. You would get a bunch of geography challenges. And yeah, sure, some thirst traps, some funny memes, you know, some humor, a lot of Cuban humor. It's figured out that I'm a Cuban American from Miami. So it tells my grandma's jokes, even though she's no longer around. So it really is ultimately up to you to train the algorithm. If you want to train it to, you know, a cinnamon challenge, you're going to get cinnamon challenge 24 hours a day. You want to train it to make you smart, you can do that as well.
Well, okay, so that's a good point, because what, and I'm talking about specifically when they started adding reels and shorts, I ignored them. So I had no algorithmic interaction with them. I was strictly using it in the old fashioned, like looking at pictures that I wanted to see. And I mostly want news, for the most part, I want news and culture. But then in the shorts, they're just, you know, pumping all this like softcore pornography at me. And finally, I got to the point where I realized what you just said, and I started only tapping on cute animals. So now I don't see all that flesh up there anymore, and I see a lot of small dogs and cats and stuff like that. But I had to quite literally do that to defend myself from sort of that raw output that they do if you're not interacting.
And I'm going to have to disagree with the former Orange president of ours. I don't think Meta is an enemy of the people. Yes, it's a social media company. They're trying to make money. I have a lot of friends who work over there. They really are trying their best. It's really hard with these technologies. And we have to admit that they have caused harm. That's why the bill just passed in Florida to ban social media to kids under 14, which PS will not stand in any court. But for now, it gives DeSantis a good platform. There is a reason why these bills are passing at the state level. But as a company, Meta is doing a whole lot more than TikTok, and they cannot be compared.
Well, they are, and you're absolutely right. They can't be compared, but that's not why the president was criticizing Meta. The president was criticizing it for Zuckbox and for steering so many votes to Joe Biden the same way that Google did. And that's been proven statistically to have happened. I think that was the real issue. But I want to circle back to something that I think is even a greater threat than stupid videos on TikTok or even you know, potentially Chinese spyware on TikTok. And it gets back to this Ronna McDaniel issue. It gets back to we, the self-appointed arbiters of what is true, need to protect you, plebs, from opinions that are dangerous. Well, who died and left Joy Reid and Rachel Maddow, the boss of what should be tolerated on air? They're not protecting us. It's viewpoint discrimination. They're protecting themselves from views that highlight their hypocrisy, their incompetence, and the failure of their ideas.
Yeah, and I think this is a real issue. And I'm not one of these people believes the election was stolen, but at the same time, I'm not bothered by Ronna McDaniel or Rachel Maddow for that matter. I'm just a moderate
Well, yeah, let them have a conversation. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But I really don't believe in canceling people. And we, you know, I can understand why the talent would be concerned about Ronan McDaniel. But ultimately, if I were NBC's talent, I wouldn't have said anything. But I think we live in the era where we want our own echo chambers. These algorithms make it worse. And we're getting to the point that we're so sensitive to hearing a view that is not like ours that it becomes just an existential threat to our being. And I agree with you with that.
David, you know what? We're just about out of time, but let me just extend for a moment here, if you got a minute or two, because I have to ask you before we let you go, what about P. Diddy? What are you tracking with this whole P. Diddy thing? My social media
feed. He's got to be called P. Diddler now.
P. Diddler, as Timothy calls him. Where are you at with this? Help me out. There's a lot of flack on this one. If we can do it shortly.
I just cannot believe, I guess it gets to the most visceral part of me, that these are people who, you know, hit the jackpot. Obviously, they have talent, but there's a lot of people walking around with talent. I mean, this man has invented modern music, has homes in all of the toniest places in America. He has a home on Star Island. That's the nicest part of Miami, and a home in Beverly Hills. And that was not enough. We had to allegedly, and I quote, allegedly traffic women and possibly men. And it's just never, never enough. And I am befuddled by the fact that he would even get anywhere close to anything like this. And as we've seen, this is a pattern of behavior with powerful people across the board. And it's very concerning.
Yes, it is, my friend. Yes, it is. And maybe we'll pick up on that thread next time, because there's still, it's like a mushroom cloud of like TMZ style news right now. I'm a little like, I'm into toxic news, but I'm going to need to let this one sink in for a minute. So maybe that'll calm down. Maybe it'll explode further, and we'll be happy to bring you back on next time. And maybe we'll hit that up as our topic. David, it's been a really fun conversation today. Always appreciate having you here on State of the Nation.
Always great to see you all. Thanks.
All right. Where can people find you real quick?
You can find me on Instagram, where Brian is currently avoiding videos, at GrassoRoots, GrassoRoots. Like Canada's All most right. famous brand, Roots.
All right. All right, David. Thank you so much. This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk TNT.
Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McLean on today's News Talk TNT.
As we reported at the top of the hour, 7 to 18% of the registered voters in each of the 26 states studied either don't exist or reside at an address that doesn't exist. One of those states was Georgia. Joining us now to discuss this attack on our republic is the co-founder of VoterGA, Voters Organized for Trusted Election Results in Georgia, Garland Favorito. Garland, welcome to State of the Nation.
Thanks, Amy. It's great to be back with you again.
Now, I'm not a career information technology professional with over 17 years conducting research into electronic voting systems like you are, but my background does include two stints in the software industry, and I'm very familiar with the old adage, garbage in, garbage out. 7 to 18% of phantom voters is extreme when most elections are decided by fewer than 5 points. Am I overreacting?
No, you're not, Timothy, at all. We have got a serious problem with voter rolls down here in Georgia that the Secretary of State won't acknowledge. We had some major testimony in the legislature about 2 weeks ago showing massive problems with the voter rolls here. As a result, the legislature has got a bill in play that would help resolve some of the problems, but not really all of them. But at least it's a good start in the right direction. That's House Bill 976. And that's actually, they have to pass that tomorrow. Because tomorrow's the last day of the legislative session, what we call sine die. And that could go a ways to begin to rectifying the problem, but it's not likely that it would be fully corrected by the November 2024 general election.
And that's not the only vulnerability that you're experiencing in Georgia, right? We've got the, first of all, those voter registration records, which are clearly a problem, and a problem across the United States, as far as we can tell. But we've discussed with you on other occasions cybersecurity problems, internet availability, remote access, a laundry list. How is it going? How's the fight going overall with the full spectrum of vote integrity, election integrity vulnerabilities?
Well, overall, Brian, we can only make some progress from the legislative side. The other thing that we have talked about is that I think we talked about this on the show last time, is the Curlin v. Raffensperger case, in which the plaintiffs, one of which is our co-founder, Ricardo Davis, three sets of plaintiffs have are trying to ban the Dominion Democracy Suite 5.5 system from the state of Georgia. We've put some great evidence on the record. Will it be enough? I think it is. Will be enough, but we'll have to wait and see. We've gotten some favorable rulings from the judge before. We are expecting a ruling on that case probably early next month, and couple that with the fact that we still have to go a long way on those machines, and then we have this roughly 10,000. Invalid voter roll record entries in the Metro Atlanta counties per county. We've coupled that, the electronic side and the voter roll side, just presents some really serious problems for this upcoming 2024 general election.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And with regards to Raffensperger, I'm seeing on Twitter today, at Real Rob N was saying 67,000 illegal ballots cast in the Georgia 2020 election. And I believe he's referring to Raffensperger when he says he's on that call January 2nd, on the call he knew, because we had just had a meeting 2 weeks previous and had already affirmed the methodology, affirmed our numbers. So I think what he's implying there is that Raffensperger has been lying for the last 4 years.
Well, Brian, we did an expose on Brad Raffensperger wrote a letter to Congress about all of these issues, and it was a 10-page letter, and we did a report that basically went through his 10-page letter point by point. We found 42 false or deceptive statements in that 10-page letter. So that's four per page. So it was amazing. And then that was used as evidence in a court case when I was out testifying for John Eastman. I testified on that document for 3 days, and almost nothing in the document was substantively refuted. And I'll be testifying that again next week, I believe, in D.C., in the Jeffrey Clark bar trial. So, there is substantial evidence that he has not been telling the truth. And it's well known throughout the state in Republican circles that he has not been honest, even with the people in his own political party.
Garland, what do you think explains his antipathy toward voter integrity and election security, his and Governor Kemp's? Is it financial corruption? Has he been bought off? Is it Trump hatred? This is a Republican. Why is he denying what everyone else so plainly sees, that the elections in Georgia are not even close to being secure?
Well, it's a great question, and it shows you that he's living on another planet somewhere. The Republicans are very upset with him. Of course, he is a Republican. But I think it's a combination of all those things, Timothy. I think there is some of it might be Trump hatred. I believe that he has gotten something as power or money behind the scenes in several different aspects. But there is something that's controlling him that is it's causing him to do things that are not for the interest of Georgia voters, and exactly in direct conflict with them.
Yeah, it's certainly. Go ahead, Timothy. Sorry.
I was just going to say, when is he up for re-election? Is he up this cycle?
He cannot be re-elected for Secretary of State. This is his second term. We still have an outstanding challenge on his primary election back in 2022, because he was polling 18 to 39% up until the day of the election, and then the machines miraculously rang up 51% of the vote, so he avoided a runoff. This will be his final term, and he's stated that indicated he was going to run for governor. I don't know how that's going to work out for him, though.
So what happens then So is there a potential recall there in that contested vote for 2022? How would that affect if that didn't go his way?
Well, it's a recall would be a different thing. This is what we call an election challenge, and it's kind of bizarre in that it has not gone to court yet. Just to give you an idea, Brian, that particular May 24, 2022 primary, the only race that was audited was a DeKalb County Commission 2 race, which we may have talked about on the show, where the system actually declared the wrong winners. And they only found that out because a candidate had zero votes in the precinct where she and her husband and family lived and voted. They found out the correct results by doing a full hand count of that race, and that was the only race that was audited in the entire election. And after they found that out, the Secretary of State's office puts tremendous pressure on the county not to audit any other races to make sure that the results were in fact correct. And no other race was audited in the state, including Brad Raffensperger's own victory.
Yeah, and that's what's needed is audits. Recounts don't matter. If you just recount garbage votes, that's no good. You need a full forensic audit. And Garland Favorito, you're one of our favorites. I want to thank you for all the great work you're doing for the people of Georgia, but really for the people of the United States, because, you know, as one of our states goes, so go all 50. And you're doing great work down there. And folks, you can find out more at voterga.org. That's voterga.org. Garland, we'll give you about a minute left to say some final words.
Well, thank you, Timothy. We really appreciate y'all for getting the word out. And it's terrific to have so many folks like you around the country who are really trying to get the message out to the people, because we can do a lot of investigative work, but y'all are what's making the difference in getting the word out. And, you know, because we are a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization, and, you know, we're volunteers. We are not getting paid to do this. We're just trying to save Georgia and hopefully, as you said, in America in the process.
And that's an excellent point, because election integrity shouldn't be a partisan issue. This isn't Republican versus Democrat. This is cheaters versus citizens, and citizens need to win this one, Garland. Want to thank you. You're a gentleman, and really appreciate you coming on. Can't wait till we talk again. I want you to have a very happy and blessed Easter with your family.
Thank you, Timothy. We will plan to do that.
That's it for State of the Nation tonight. Stay tuned to TNT for the Jason Burma Show. For Brian McClain, I'm Timothy Shea. Until next time, God bless you. God bless these United States. Keep fighting the good fight.